Escuelas oficiales de idiomas de Andalucía. Comprensión oral. Inglés. Nivel avanzado C1. Tarea 1. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Depression is a very misunderstood disorder. People will tend to stereotype depression and make it seem as though you're typically sad all the time and hate the world, but that is far from the truth. Depression has sub-disorders that will have different symptoms, intensities, and causes. Here are the different types of depression. Disruptive mood dysregulation disorder. If you tend to have continuous outbursts of temper, either physical or verbal, and it happens 3 times a week, that is one of the symptoms for disruptive mood dysregulation disorder. Other symptoms that you could experience are feeling sad or moody besides the anger 3 times a week, or having severe outbursts. It's more likely that you have this disorder if these symptoms have occurred for more than a year, or if the symptoms started before the age of 10. Another sub-disorder of depression is major depressive disorder, which can also be known as clinical depression. Those with this disorder may have an episode for longer periods of time, while others may only have had an episode once in their life. People with MDD have the following symptoms for nearly a 2-week span, and it will usually arise every day. Feeling hopeless, sad, or numb. Decreased motivation for things that they used to like. Increased or decreased appetite, which could lead to weight gain or loss, respectively. Changes in sleep. Fatigue. Being unable to concentrate. Forgetfulness. Thoughts of death or suicide. Suicide attempts. And self-harm. MDD can be mixed with different disorders like anxiety, melancholic features, catatonia, peripartum onset, psychotic features, and seasonal patterns. Persistent depressive disorder, also known as dysthymia, is an ongoing depressive disorder. The symptoms are not as clear as MDD, however, the symptoms usually happen almost every day for 2 years in adults and at least 1 year for children and adolescents. The symptoms that go along with dysthymia are appetite change, change in sleep cycle, low energy, poor self-esteem, feelings of hopelessness, bad concentration, forgetfulness, and lack of motivation. Dysthymia can be mixed with other disorders just like MDD. It can also range in levels of severity. Premenstrual dysphoric disorder is disabling approximately 3 to 8% of women, and no one can really figure out why. The following symptoms occur during the menstrual cycle, and a usual diagnosis would require at least 5 of the following symptoms to be present: mood swings, increased sensitivity, feelings of hopelessness or being overwhelmed, anxiety, feeling tired and sluggish, a lack of interest in activities, and insomnia or excessive amounts of sleep. The disorder also has physical symptoms, such as joint pain, bloating, weight gain, tender breasts, and swelling. This disorder will affect school, work, and relationships. Substance medication-induced depressive disorder. This disorder is present during the use of medication or during substance abuse. Symptoms include irritability, depressive episodes, bad temper, a sense of hopelessness, and no interest or pleasure in anything. These symptoms will occur when using the substance or when in withdrawal. Most people use drugs or substances to feel better and will usually not notice the symptoms they have for substance medication-induced depressive disorder. Depressive disorder due to another medical condition is another type of depression. Arthritis, diabetes, HIV, strokes, viral infections, and much more can cause you to have depression. Symptoms can include a persistent depressive mood, lack of interest, irritability, and an elevated or expansive mood. We hope this helps you out. If you experience any of these symptoms, please see your doctor or find someone you trust to talk to, especially if your symptoms persist. Thank you for watching. Don't forget to like this video and subscribe to our channel.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Depression is a very misunderstood disorder. People will tend to stereotype depression and make it seem as though you're typically sad all the time and hate the world, but that is far from the truth. Depression has sub-disorders that will have different symptoms, intensities, and causes. Here are the different types of depression. Disruptive mood dysregulation disorder. If you tend to have continuous outbursts of temper, either physical or verbal, and it happens 3 times a week, that is one of the symptoms for disruptive mood dysregulation disorder. Other symptoms that you could experience are feeling sad or moody besides the anger 3 times a week, or having severe outbursts. It's more likely that you have this disorder if these symptoms have occurred for more than a year, or if the symptoms started before the age of 10. Another sub-disorder of depression is major depressive disorder, which can also be known as clinical depression. Those with this disorder may have an episode for longer periods of time, while others may only have had an episode once in their life. People with MDD have the following symptoms for nearly a 2-week span, and it will usually arise every day: feeling hopeless, sad, or numb, decreased motivation for things that they used to like, increased or decreased appetite, which could lead to weight gain or loss respectively, changes in sleep, fatigue, being unable to concentrate, forgetfulness, thoughts of death or suicide, suicide attempts, and self-harm. MDD can be mixed with different disorders like anxiety, melancholic features, catatonia, peripartum onset, psychotic features, and seasonal patterns. Persistent depressive disorder, also known as dysthymia, is an ongoing depressive disorder. The symptoms are not as clear as MDD, however, the symptoms usually happen almost every day for 2 years in adults and at least 1 year for children and adolescents. The symptoms that go along with dysthymia are appetite change, change in sleep cycle, low energy, poor self-esteem, feelings of hopelessness, bad concentration, forgetfulness, and lack of motivation. Dysthymia can be mixed with other disorders just like MDD. It can also range in levels of severity. Premenstrual dysphoric disorder is disabling approximately 3-8% of women, and no one can really figure out why. The following symptoms occur during the menstrual cycle, and a usual diagnosis would require at least 5 of the following symptoms to be present: mood swings, increased sensitivity, feelings of hopelessness or being overwhelmed, anxiety, feeling tired and sluggish, a lack of interest in activities, and insomnia or excessive amounts of sleep. The disorder also has physical symptoms, such as joint pain, bloating, weight gain, tender breasts, and swelling. This disorder will affect school, work, and relationships. Substance medication-induced depressive disorder. This disorder is present during the use of medication or during substance abuse. Symptoms include irritability, depressive episodes, bad temper, a sense of hopelessness, and no interest or pleasure in anything. These symptoms will occur when using the substance or when in withdrawal. Most people use drugs or substances to feel better and will usually not notice the symptoms they have for substance medication-induced depressive disorder. Depressive disorder due to another medical condition is another type of depression. Arthritis, diabetes, HIV, strokes, viral infections, and much more can cause you to have depression. Symptoms can include a persistent depressive mood, lack of interest, irritability, and an elevated or expansive mood. We hope this helps you out. If you experience any of these symptoms, please see your doctor or find someone you trust to talk to, especially if your symptoms persist. Thank you for watching. Don't forget to like this video and subscribe to our channel.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 1. Tarea 2. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
A sky blue canvas ripped open by an enormous skull, teeth bared through visceral slashes of oil and spray paint. In 2017, this untitled artwork was auctioned off for over $110 million. But it's not the work of some old master. These strokes of genius belong to 21-year-old black Brooklynite Jean-Michel Basquiat, one of America's most charismatic painters and currently its highest sold. Born in 1960 to a Haitian father and a Puerto Rican mother, Basquiat spent his childhood making art and mischief in Borum Hill. While he never attended art school, he learned by wandering through New York galleries and listening to the music his father played at home. He drew inspiration from unexpected places, scribbling his own versions of cartoons, comic books, and biblical scenes on scrap paper from his father's office. But it was a medical encyclopedia that arguably exerted the most powerful influence on Basquiat. When young Jean-Michel was hit by a car, his mother brought a copy of Grey's Anatomy to his hospital bed. It ignited a lifelong fascination with anatomy that manifested in the skulls, sinew, and guts of his later work, which frequently explores both the power and vulnerability of marginalized bodies. By 17, he launched his first foray into the art world with his friend Al Diaz. They spray-painted cryptic statements and symbols all over Lower Manhattan, signed with the mysterious moniker SAMO. These humorous, profound, and rebellious declarations were strategically scattered throughout Soho's art scene. And after revealing himself as the artist, Basquiat leveraged SAMO's success to enter the scene himself, selling postcards, playing clubs with his avant-garde band, and boldly seeking out his heroes. By 21, he turned to painting full-time. His process was a sort of calculated improvisation. Like beat writers who composed their work by shredding and reassembling scraps of writing, Basquiat used similar cut-up techniques to remix his materials. When he couldn't afford canvases, he fashioned them out of discarded wood he found on the street. He used oil stick, crayons, spray paint, and pencil, and pulled quotes from the menus, comic books, and textbooks he kept open on the studio floor. He kept these sources open on his studio floor, often working on multiple projects at once, pulling in splintered anatomy, reimagined historical scenes, and skulls transplanted from classical still lives. Basquiat repurposed both present-day experiences and art history into an inventive visual language. He worked as if inserting himself into the legacy of artists he borrowed from, producing collages that were just as much in conversation with art history as they were with each other. For instance, Toussaint Louverture versus Savonarola and Undiscovered Genius of the Mississippi Delta offer two distinct visions of Basquiat's historical and contemporary concerns, but they echo each other in the details, such as the reappearing head that also resurfaces in PPCD. All these pieces form a network that offers physical evidence of Basquiat's restless and prolific mind. These chaotic canvases won rapid acclaim and attention, but despite his increasingly mainstream audience, Basquiat insisted on depicting challenging themes of identity and oppression. Marginalized figures take center stage, such as prisoners, cooks, and janitors. His obsession with bodies, history, and representation can be found in works evoking the Atlantic slave trade and African history, as well as pieces focusing on contemporary race relations. In less than a decade, Basquiat made thousands of paintings and drawings, along with sculpture, fragments of poetry, and music. His output accelerated alongside his meteoric rise to fame, but his life and work were cut tragically short when he died from a drug overdose at the age of 27. After his death, Basquiat's work only increased in value, but the energy and flair of his pieces have impacted much more than their financial worth. Today, his influence swirls around us in music, poetry, fashion, and film, and his art retains the power to shock, inspire, and get under our skin. If you want to keep exploring the world of art and artists, check out this playlist.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
A sky blue canvas ripped open by an enormous skull. Teeth bared through visceral slashes of oil and spray paint. In 2017, this untitled artwork was auctioned off for over $110 million. But it's not the work of some old master. These strokes of genius belong to 21-year-old black Brooklynite Jean-Michel Basquiat, one of America's most charismatic painters and currently its highest sold. Born in 1960 to a Haitian father and a Puerto Rican mother, Basquiat spent his childhood making art and mischief in Borum Hill. While he never attended art school, he learned by wandering through New York galleries and listening to the music his father played at home. He drew inspiration from unexpected places, scribbling his own versions of cartoons, comic books, and biblical scenes on scrap paper from his father's office. But it was a medical encyclopedia that arguably exerted the most powerful influence on Basquiat. When young Jean-Michel was hit by a car, his mother brought a copy of Grey's Anatomy to his hospital bed. It ignited a lifelong fascination with anatomy that manifested in the skulls, sinew, and guts of his later work, which frequently explores both the power and vulnerability of marginalized bodies. By 17, he launched his first foray into the art world with his friend Al Diaz. They spray-painted cryptic statements and symbols all over Lower Manhattan, signed with the mysterious moniker SAMO. These humorous, profound, and rebellious declarations were strategically scattered throughout Soho's art scene. And after revealing himself as the artist, Basquiat leveraged SAMO's success to enter the scene himself, selling postcards, playing clubs with his avant-garde band, and boldly seeking out his heroes. By 21, he turned to painting full-time. His process was a sort of calculated improvisation. Like beat writers who composed their work by shredding and reassembling scraps of writing, Basquiat used similar cut-up techniques to remix his materials. When he couldn't afford canvases, he fashioned them out of discarded wood he found on the street. He used oil stick, crayons, spray paint, and pencil, and pulled quotes from the menus, comic books, and textbooks he kept open on the studio floor. He kept these sources open on his studio floor, often working on multiple projects at once, pulling in splintered anatomy, reimagined historical scenes, and skulls transplanted from classical still lives. Basquiat repurposed both present-day experiences and art history into an inventive visual language. He worked as if inserting himself into the legacy of artists he borrowed from, producing collages that were just as much in conversation with art history as they were with each other. For instance, Toussaint Louverture versus Savonarola and Undiscovered Genius of the Mississippi Delta offer two distinct visions of Basquiat's historical and contemporary concerns, but they echo each other in the details, such as the reappearing head that also resurfaces in PPCD. All these pieces form a network that offers physical evidence of Basquiat's restless and prolific mind. These chaotic canvases won rapid acclaim and attention, but despite his increasingly mainstream audience, Basquiat insisted on depicting challenging themes of identity and oppression. Marginalized figures take center stage, such as prisoners, cooks, and janitors. His obsession with bodies, history, and representation can be found in works evoking the Atlantic slave trade and African history, as well as pieces focusing on contemporary race relations. In less than a decade, Basquiat made thousands of paintings and drawings, along with sculpture, fragments of poetry, and music. His output accelerated alongside his meteoric rise to fame, but his life and work were cut tragically short when he died from a drug overdose at the age of 27. After his death, Basquiat's work only increased in value, but the energy and flair of his pieces have impacted much more than their financial worth. Today, his influence swirls around us in music, poetry, fashion, and film, and his art retains the power to shock, inspire, and get under our skin. If you want to keep exploring the world of art and artists, check out this playlist.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 2. Tarea 3. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
In 2016, 11.5 million files were leaked from Mossack Fonseca, the world's fourth largest offshore law firm. These were called the Panama Papers. Hundreds of thousands of offshore entities and shell companies connected to over 200 countries and territories appear in the papers. Prominent world leaders, politicians, business people, and the super wealthy were exposed to have been using offshore accounts for tax avoidance and other purposes. So, why should you care? Every year, about $70 billion that the U.S. could be using for infrastructure, law enforcement, healthcare, or education is missing. It's hidden deep within shell companies and anonymous entities in places like the British Virgin Islands. Now let's back up. What exactly is a shell company anyway?
Setting up a shell company is really quite easy. You can go to a place like Panama or the British Virgin Islands or Delaware or Nevada, and usually the places where you're doing it have tough laws where they will not reveal sort of who the beneficial owner is, and they just sort of layer on different aspects of anonymity. So for example, you could have fake directors where you pay a little bit extra and someone pretends to be the public face of this company. Just because you have a shell company does not mean necessarily that you're doing anything illegal. Say for example, you want to have some business activities but you don't want certain business partners to know what you're doing. The more normal one is some form of legal tax avoidance. I think that a lot of people in the U.S. think that tax evasion and tax avoidance is something that happens in a far-off place with palm trees and ocean breezes. And the reality is it's a big deal here. I mean, the U.S. Treasury estimates that something like $300 billion a year is laundered through the United States. Foreigners are coming in and buying a property with anonymous shell companies, and some of that is perfectly legitimate, but some of it is clearly money laundering and corrupt officials and other people using their cash to park it in property and making it impossible for the people who live there to afford it.
Of the 214,000 entities identified in the Panama Papers, about one half of them are located in the British Virgin Islands. How did this tiny area become such a huge tax haven? Mossack Fonseca is a Panama-based law firm founded in 1977. After instability in Panama was pushing clients away during the 80s, the firm discovered the British Virgin Islands were ripe new territory for anonymous shell companies.
Their vision was to be the McDonald's of the offshore system, right? It was high volume, low cost. And so they were going to pump out these anonymous shell companies and make them available to a wider audience. In the beginning, that's a great business model, right? Because all you're doing is you create this anonymous shell company, you give it a name, you don't care who actually is behind it, and you stick it in a folder and you forget about it until a year passes and it's time to invoice for the renewal. Later on, you know, there's more vetting. Governments start to realize that these are being used by criminals and money launderers and things like that, and so they say, we need more information. And I asked Jürgen Mosak, did you ever see that wonderful I Love Lucy episode where she's in the chocolate factory and she's trying to keep up with the conveyor belt and it's going faster and faster? And he said, yes, it was very much like that at a certain point.
So we know it's a big problem, but how is this still happening?
There's a lot of bureaucratic inertia and timidity in the IRS, for sure. But another big part of it is that Congress has eviscerated the IRS. They've starved it of funds, there's been a lot of retirements, and so you've deliberately hobbled the IRS and made it impossible for them to go after this kind of tax evasion. It's going to take people being aware that, you know, the reality is we don't have to accept the austerity that is being forced on us. I mean, the Europeans are ahead of us on this because they got hit very hard after the financial crisis. You know, there were major cutbacks in multiple countries. And so when these leak investigations started coming out and they found out that the mega wealthy amongst them were not paying their fair share, people got very upset about that. And it really hasn't penetrated in the United States quite as much, but I suspect that it will in the future.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
In 2016, 11.5 million files were leaked from Mossack Fonseca, the world's fourth largest offshore law firm. These were called the Panama Papers. Hundreds of thousands of offshore entities and shell companies connected to over 200 countries and territories appear in the papers. Prominent world leaders, politicians, business people, and the super wealthy were exposed to have been using offshore accounts for tax avoidance and other purposes. So, why should you care? Every year, about $70 billion that the US could be using for infrastructure, law enforcement, healthcare, or education is missing. It's hidden deep within shell companies and anonymous entities in places like the British Virgin Islands. Now let's back up. What exactly is a shell company anyway?
Setting up a shell company is really quite easy. You can go to a place like Panama or the British Virgin Islands or Delaware or Nevada. And usually the places where you're doing it have tough laws where they will not reveal sort of who the beneficial owner is. And they just sort of layer on different aspects of anonymity. So for example, you could have fake directors where you pay a little bit extra and someone pretends to be the public face of this company. Just because you have a shell company does not mean necessarily that you're doing anything illegal. Say for example, you want to have some business activity but you don't want certain business partners to know what you're doing. The more normal one is some form of legal tax avoidance. I think that a lot of people in the US think that tax evasion and tax avoidance is something that happens in a far-off place with palm trees and ocean breezes. And the reality is it's a big deal here. I mean, the US Treasury estimates that something like $300 billion a year is laundered through the United States. Foreigners are coming in and buying a property with anonymous shell companies, and some of that is perfectly legitimate, but some of it is clearly money laundering and corrupt officials and other people using their cash to park it in property and making it impossible for the people who live there to afford it.
Of the 214,000 entities identified in the Panama Papers, about one half of them are located in the British Virgin Islands. How did this tiny area become such a huge tax haven? Mossack Fonseca is a Panama-based law firm founded in 1977. After instability in Panama was pushing clients away during the 80s, the firm discovered the British Virgin Islands were ripe new territory for anonymous shell companies.
Their vision was to be the McDonald's of the offshore system, right? It was high volume, low cost. And so they were going to pump out these anonymous shell companies and make them available to a wider audience. In the beginning, that's a great business model, right? Because all you're doing is you create this anonymous shell company, you give it a name, you don't care who actually is behind it, and you stick it in a folder and you forget about it until a year passes and it's time to invoice for the renewal. Later on, you know, there's more vetting. Governments start to realize that these are being used by criminals and money launderers and things like that, and so they say, we need more information. And I asked Jürgen Mossack, did you ever see that wonderful I Love Lucy episode where she's in the chocolate factory and she's trying to keep up with the conveyor belt and it's going faster and faster? And he said, yes, it was very much like that at a certain point.
So we know it's a big problem, but how is this still happening?
There's a lot of bureaucratic inertia and timidity in the IRS, for sure. But another big part of it is that Congress has eviscerated the IRS. They've starved it of funds. There's been a lot of retirements. And so you've deliberately hobbled the IRS and made it impossible for them to go after this kind of tax evasion. It's gonna take people being aware that, the reality is we don't have to accept the austerity that is being forced on us. I mean, the Europeans are ahead of us on this because they got hit very hard after the financial crisis. There were major cutbacks in multiple countries. And so when these leak investigations started coming out and they found out that the mega wealthy amongst them were not paying their fair share, people got very upset about that. And it really hasn't penetrated in the United States quite as much, but I suspect that it will in the future.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 3. Aquí acaba la prueba de comprensión oral. Por favor, siga las instrucciones del profesorado en su aula.